We're beginning a new sermon series this term in the book of Genesis, which is why we had that reading from Genesis a little earlier in our service. We're going to be looking at chapters 1 to 11, which are the first sort of section of the book between now and Christmas, occasional break for some things, and then in the new year we'll press on into the rest of the book. I'm not quite sure how long it'll take us yet, but that's the plan. Well, as we begin today, we're just going to look at the first verse and introduce some of the key themes of the book. And I want us to begin with a question, which is going to come up on the screen. Very simple. Why are we here? I'd like you to imagine that you do a survey on the street or at the school gates or around your office or wherever, and you ask people, what would you say if I asked you, why are we here? What are some of the variety of replies you might hear to that question? On your tables, you've got a minute. Go. Let's draw back together. Some answers. What are some things we might say? Let me point. Table here. People might say.
I think most people say, haven't thought about it.
Haven't thought about it. Okay, interesting. Haven't thought about it. Okay, so we've come about through various cosmic processes. Well, sorry, I'm getting American English here. I'm not doing a very good job of it. But we're here to enjoy it, okay? Next table, anything?
Our parents wanted to have children.
Okay, I'm here because my parents, hey, they got together. Guys, anything? Don't know. We just don't know why we're here. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. So whatever situation in life determines my purpose and why I'm here. Jemima, you were waving. Okay. Yeah. So that's too big a question. But since I am here and since I live here and I'm in this situation, then I will give myself to this. Yeah? Others? Tim, you're waving a hand. To be a good consumer. Yeah, well, you'd think so in many ways. Kim, is that a hand? It's like a half-hearted hand, yeah. Yeah, yeah, so some sort of hardline scientists saying, you know, we're all just evolved and so on, there is no ultimate purpose, so the best you can do is make up your own, and we'll come back to that a little bit later and him. Anything else for anyone? Sorry? Custodians of planet Earth. Yeah? Tim again? We're here to live a good life. And of course, you have to ask why. Mike's smiling. To discover why we're here. Okay. Tim? To leave things in a better state than we found them. Catherine? To reproduce. Yeah? Okay, there's a variety of answers. Now, what's actually interesting is you can take that question two ways, and I don't know if you noticed, but in our answer, we did actually have two different sorts of answers. So you can say, why are we here? In other words, what made us exist? How did we get here? Cosmic processes and so on. Or we could say, what's our purpose? Why are we here? What am I to do in life? And of course, those two are then connected. How we came to exist shapes the meaning of our existence. Our origin and our purpose are connected. So across the world and throughout time, you will come across many myths and stories and so on from different tribes and religions, etc., explaining the left side. How do we come to be here? What makes us exist? And that ties into, well, what is our purpose in life? What are we here to do and for? Now, of course, in our country and in our time, the majority people would simply say, well, what made us exist? Chance. Cosmic accidents of some sort. Some sort of big bang followed by some sort of evolutionary process. Things just happened, and we are here as a result. We are the end product. And of course, if you say that, then you say that there was no mind or intention or purpose behind our existence. And so there is no ultimate meaning. And as I say again, throughout history, different religions would have some story of it. There's a battle between the gods, and this happens and that happens, and people are the end result or something. But what we've done is kind of cut ourselves loose from any explanation of origin that has any meaning to it. We are just here. It's just how it turned out. This book, Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, it's actually been on the top of the bestseller list for months and months and months, I think showing a very interesting sort of interest in our origins and our history. The opening chapter title on Where We Come From is simply called An Animal of No Significance. That's who we are. An animal of no significance. We just happen to have climbed to the top of the tree. Philosophers have often discussed this question, you know, the meaning of life, what we're here for, and standardly admit we cannot give an objective, certain answer. One guy I read this week said, we can explain why we do things within life. You work to earn money to support yourself and your family. You eat because you're hungry. You sleep because you're tired. You go for a walk because you like it, and so on. But he says, I quote, the problem is that these explanations are for most of the things we do within life. None of them explain the point of your life as a whole. If you think about the whole thing, he says, there seems to be no point to it at all. Now, of course, what then happens is people say, well, doesn't matter, I'll just get on with life. I'll enjoy life. And that can work for a bit. You just have to not raise your sights to these sorts of questions. That's what we were saying earlier. You know, you just stay busy. You invest yourself in your family and your work and your hobbies, and you enjoy some of those things. And you don't ask if there's any meaning beyond that. But that philosopher I just mentioned says, it's a great phrase, he says we have an incurable tendency to take ourselves seriously, such that we ask questions and we want to matter. We're just not, we can press on as long as we don't lift our eyes, as long as we just keep on focused on life and just do stuff. Okay, but if we lift our eyes, we ask big questions. Here's a cartoon I came across. Eat, survive, reproduce. Eat, survive, reproduce, and so on. That's the story of evolution. Eat, survive, reproduce. And then we come along and we suddenly go, why are we here? What's it all about? For us, life feels like it is much more than eat, survive, reproduce. It feels like there must be more meaning than that. We experience, you know, things like love and compassion for each other. We care about justice and morality. We have feelings of right and wrong. We long for purpose and satisfaction and peace. And if it is all random, if we are just the end of that process, then all of that stuff is things we've just kind of constructed out of thin air. In fact, scientists like Richard Dawkins, we mentioned, say, oh, we've evolved to have feelings of right and wrong or to feel compassion or love because they'll help us survive. It's just very intellectual ways of eat, survive, reproduce. But there's nothing behind those feelings. There's nothing true to them. It is all constructed by us. So look, Genesis is about beginnings. The word Genesis means beginnings or origin. This is the story of where we come from. Genesis explains how we got here, why we exist, what we're like, how we're to live. It goes on into what has gone wrong with the world, why the world is the way it is. It moves on to what God is doing to put the world right. One of the things I want us to see over these next weeks is that we actually have a better explanation of the world. A fuller, more satisfying, better explanation of who we are and why we are as we are and what we are here for. And we begin today just with the first verse. Do open your Bibles if you've got them open. Genesis, first book of the Bible, very easy to find. I'm guessing it is on. It's not actually, unfortunately, it's not on page 1. It's on page 3 in our Bibles. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Those few words change the way you think of yourself and the world you live in. They are the start of the story we find ourselves in. And the whole story is different because it starts that way. I just want to go through it phrase by phrase. First of all, in the beginning. That means this world has a start point. There was a beginning. If we go back far enough, as it were, there was nothing. It's hard for us to imagine nothing. There was no space for nothing to exist in, and there was no time in which it existed. There was nothing except God. Current science agrees the universe has a beginning. Didn't always say that. It does at the moment. Big Bang Theory. There was a moment where it all started. It can't look beyond that or behind that or say why that happened. It has to assume there was a something for there to be a Big Bang, but it doesn't know what. The Bible says behind that was God. There wasn't just stuff existing that exploded. In the beginning, God. And in the beginning, God created. He is the first cause of everything else. He brought space and time and matter into being. His creation is not like how we create things. You know, strictly speaking, we reform things. You know, we make things. That is, we take something that exists and we reshape it, put it together. And we do so with great ingenuity and amazing results, but we cannot bring something into being in the first place. We cannot make something exist out of thin air. Well, except forget the air. You haven't even got the air. That doesn't exist. We can't even make air. That is what God does. He is the source of this world. He gave it and he gave us existence. This is repeated throughout the Bible. We began began the service singing that song based on Psalm 104. The Lord wraps himself in light as with a garment. He stretches out the heavens like a tent. He set the earth on its foundations. Or Isaiah has God speaking. It is I who made the earth and created mankind to live on it. And we're then told in the New Testament, it is through Jesus that creation comes about. Jesus, who was with God, his Father, in the beginning, John 1. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. Everything exists because God created it. Now we will look next time at the details of chapter 1 and how these days are structured and what is happening in them and what they are teaching us. But of course, what I'm saying now and what we'll look at next time raises the question of how all this fits with science. And that has been an area of great debate, some people holding to a literal 6-24-hour period creation, and others saying, no, God used evolution, and so on. And we don't want to get sidetracked by that in our sermons. We want to focus on what this is actually teaching us, but neither do we want to just ignore that as if it's not an issue. And so what we're going to do is to have an evening session in some week's time when we've covered some of the material, where we can sit back and we can wrestle with that question in particular, and so that anyone who's interested hopefully will be able to be there for that. The point now is simply that God created by whatever means. He didn't have to. He chose to. The world exists because God exists. The world exists because God wanted the world to exist. You know, we are here because God wanted us to be. So God created then the heavens and the earth, which is a way of saying everything, absolutely everything. Everything exists because God made it. Nothing's excluded. Like in John 1, without him, nothing was made that has been made. I remember a kids' video we had, we used to watch, Christian video, and someone walked around a forest singing a song, "What Can You See That God Made?" And they sang this little ditty, and then one of the kids with him would point to, you know, "I see a tree or something," and everyone would say, "God made that." And we used to sing it with our song, with our kids occasionally, and it really works, you know, in the forest. Then you'd be at home and we'd sing it and say, "What can you see?" And someone would point at a table and go, "Table," and go, "God made that." And someone said, "No, I think it was IKEA," you know. But of course, God made what the thing was made of that IKEA used. Ultimately, you can point at anything and everything in the world. There is nothing that your finger could point at where you don't say, God made that. He makes everything. So let's see this in a diagram for a second. There is then God and there is his creation. God the creator and what he made. There is nothing else. There are no other categories. Well, that changes the way you think about the world. That's very different to the way lots of other people think about the world. Materialism today just crosses God out and says all we have is creation. There's only the stuff, the matter. So there is no spiritual side to life. There is no spiritual world. There is no God. There's only what we can see and touch. And we say, no, there is God and there is creation. At the opposite, and that's the most common in our society, but elsewhere in the world, there'd be mysticism, where actually you'd say creation doesn't really exist. Buddhism, for example, says the created world is an illusion. There is really only the divine. And we say, no, God created a physical world. These are real physical bodies. Significant in things that, like how you think about suffering. Buddhism ultimately says suffering is an illusion. We say, no, it hurts because we have a physical body and it hurts. We feel it. Others mix God up with his creation. It's often referred to as pantheism. It's where everything is God somehow. You see it in people talking about Mother Nature or Gaia, some people call it. You know, the world is spoken of like Mother Nature has this intent and purpose, a mind of her own, as it were, and creates herself. The world is God. And God and matter sort of merge together. No, that there is God and there is creation. See, one of the purposes of this opening chapter of Genesis is to counter other versions of creation that would have been rolling around for God's people at the time, because other versions of creation result in other ways of seeing the world. And it's the same for us. You know, this means we don't believe in polytheism, where there are lots of gods. No, there is this God who made the world, and there is what he made. There's nothing else. It means we don't believe in dualism, where there are two competing forces in the world, good and bad, like Star Wars, you know, sort of, there's the force and there's the good side and the dark side. But you see it in things like Chinese religions, yin and yang. And these two forces work their way out throughout all of life and creation. No, there's God, and there's what he made. So the world has a beginning, if we go on to him. It is in God. He created the heavens and the earth. That is the start of our story. That is the start of the story of the world. That lays the foundation for understanding ourselves and our world rightly. So let me ask you a quick question, and then I'll draw some things together. What difference does this make? That God created us. That this is the start of the story. I've mentioned some things already, but on your tables, just for a minute or two, what difference does that make to how you see the world? Go for it. Okay, let's draw back together. I've got one sort of main point I want to make in a moment, but it'd be good to hear a few thoughts first. Who wants to kick us off? What difference does that make? Yeah, David. Everything. Would you like to expand or just sit there? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Other hands started to go up. Yeah. So he made us, we're not in a vacuum, we've got him to go to find our purpose. Yeah. Richard?
Maybe extrapolating a bit, but the very fact that we have Genesis 1:1 means that he actually wants to communicate with us. If it's true, then the only way we know it's true is because he told us.
Yeah, thank you. So he, this is true, and God wants us to know this about ourselves. He's communicated this to us, he's told us this, so he wants us to understand our world and him, presumably so that we can respond rightly and relate to him rightly. Other thoughts? Rob?
I think it humbles us because we are not in this category. So we're not made in this image, but we're entirely part of that creation.
Yeah. Yes, there's God and there's his creation. We are part of the creation. This is, he is God, he made us, it is his world. And that, I mean, we'll, in some week's time we'll come to our being made and being made in his image. But this humbles us, keeps us in our place, as it were. Thank you. Some other hands were going up. Karis.
If God made it, it's his world, and he then can decide whether he lets us do everything or not. Yeah.
Along with creation comes the idea of ownership and right and authority. And that's not stated specifically here in Genesis 1:1, but elsewhere in the Bible, the idea of God having created the world means it is his world and he can determine things. Other thoughts, Rodney? Everything gets related back to him, what is right and wrong in the world, what he wants to see or not see in the world, and so on. Absolutely.
Forgive my ignorance, but who wrote the book of Genesis?
Who wrote the book of Genesis? Very good question. Jesus refers to Moses having, when he quotes some of chapter 2, he says, Moses said. Right. And so there, that's the simple answer. There's a more complicated version as well, but there's a simple answer. And I think that's, I think Moses wrote it. It may have got edited then over time. So, Catherine.
Just trusting that God is
Yeah, thank you. So, and this is just the start of the story, God creates. Presumably he has purpose and intent and goodwill and so on. We know the story goes wrong, as it were, but God is committed to having a good and right creation. And hence, we sang earlier about his recreating. Other thoughts, Tim? Yes, thank you. There's several things wrapped up in that, but we'll be covering them in a sense over the next weeks. That if he created the world, we'll see next week that it's a good world, and he has good intent for it, which raises the question, well, where does evil and suffering come from in the world? In one sense, this creates a problem, but actually, if you don't think this, then you have nowhere to go with suffering. You just say, it is just how it is, suck it up. At least this gives you somewhere to go with it and ask the question, why would it be here? And what would God do about it? Lots of great thoughts, and we'll pick up on some of those in our small groups this week. Let me just run with where we began with, and that is thinking about purpose and meaning. If we click on one, Tim. If we think about purpose and meaning, you know, when we began, we thought about how if we are here by chance, if this is random, then life is meaningless. And that's really led people in two directions. You get some thinkers, particularly back in the 20th century, some people just kind of led into despair. If life is meaningless, if there is no purpose to it all, what's the point? You may as well die. You're not living for anything. And anything you try living for is something you've just created and made up for yourself. So just the whole, you know, it just becomes really bleak and black. And you had various writers and philosophers writing like that. Just despair. The other way to go is actually more common today. And that is, okay, there is no real meaning. We're just here by chance. Let's make up a reason. Let's find a reason. And you can find a reason and I can find a reason. A few years ago, Richard Dawkins did this TV series, Sex, Death, and the Meaning of Life. In the last episode particularly, he talked about the meaning. And he says, you know, he traces evolution and so on, says we're all here by chance, so there is no ultimate meaning. So, he says, we have to make up our own. Doesn't actually matter what you do, just find a purpose. And this is where we then have purpose invented by us. And you'll get people saying all sorts of things. You know, we're here to make the world a better place. We're here to better ourselves. We're here to flourish. We're here to enjoy life. Whatever. And some of those are, you know, perfectly good and admirable things. But of course, I say they're good and admirable. That means I think I have a basis to assess them. To say they're good and admirable. Someone else could say, I'm just here to enjoy myself at the expense of everyone else. And so we'd say, well, that sounds a bit selfish. And you say, well, yeah, but where did the idea of selfishness come from? It's just in my genes. I'm just here to eat, survive, reproduce. And there is, you have no argument against that. So while people will often talk about meaning in a kind of, it's a kind of disarming way and a well-meaning way. We're here to leave the world a better place. And everyone goes, oh, yes. Actually, I think we just need to puncture that and say, why? Why are we here? How do you know? Rather than just going, yes. I don't, obviously, it depends on the relationship and the conversation and all the rest. I don't just mean you just go, no. You know, to people, you know. But my point is, this is the best that the world around us can come up with, and it has no basis. It stands on nothing. So it sounds well-meaning, and some of them have become kind of little catchphrases of our time, but they are meaningless. They are based on nothing. And gently, lovingly, kindly, we need to say so, and we need to believe so. See, this is where meaning is invented by us. It's like, you know, I was at a car boot sale yesterday morning. You walk around the car boot sale, people have all sorts of things. And some guys have these big piles of tools, old rusted bits of metal and stuff. And you sort of walk along and you're thinking, I've got no idea what that is. You know, some funny curved bit of metal with things on the end and whatever. And I could pick it up and think, oh, I'll have that. What shall I use it for? Oh, I think I'll use it for this or for that. I mean, it's quite a paperweight, or I could use it to sort of, you know, hit this thing. Or I could use it for anything. But it's an invented purpose. And what I need at that moment is for someone to say, no, what that is it was made to. And this is where the purpose is given to us rather than invented by us. Given by the Maker. We need to be told where we come from and what we're for. And from Genesis 1:1, the first part of the answer is we exist because God wanted us to exist, and so if he created us, we only know our purpose in life with respect to him. We began our service with Revelation 4. You are worthy, our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they have their being. If God made us, he is the center of the world, the center of worship and reality. Life and the world revolves around him. And we find our meaning with respect to him, which of course contains its own challenge. Being made and having a purpose, and so being given a purpose in life, means we're not free to simply live life as we like. It's not our world. Life having meaning from God means life has direction. And we resist that. We would actually prefer a meaningless life where we can live as we want. That's what happens when we sin, when we turn against God. We throw him off because we want to be God. We want it to be our world where we can live as we like. God is where we will find meaning and purpose, but to find it, we have to stop being the center of the world and bow in worship in front of him and say, I am here because you made me. I owe my existence to you. I only move and have my being and all there is around me because of you. That's the start of the story. That's the foundation of our life. This is your world. You made it. You're God. Let's stop there. And we're going to carry on with some reflection on that, and Josh is going to lead us. But let's have a moment's quiet for us to sit and reflect ourselves. And then Josh will lead us in some reflection.